Anyone just joining us, start up your Xbox Fitness and make sure it's on Yasmin Bleeth's Baywatch Body Channel.
Hey.
Hey.
All right, Tanner, give it to me straight. Is this shit the real deal, or am I looking at another fitness fad?
I'm not even joking. This is a serious workout for serious people.
What's that supposed to mean?
Listen, man, to be honest, you haven't been committed to this fitness stuff at all.
Oh, come on.
You quit Pilates, yoga, Zumba, CrossFit, Monster Jocks, Corn Survival,
I'll give you Corn Survival.
Hacky back, hip hop dance, jazz legends extreme, dog lifting.
Oh, I lift
quit
dogs.
That stripper pole shit twice, laser ropes.
That shit scares
spin,
me.
Racquetball, meat biking.
I'm vegetarian.
Aerial jacking and Pacific pecs in the same day. Paddle boarding, water boarding, extreme standing, and hyper sitting 6,500.
I've got all the gear to do those.
It's just
home.
This last month. You flaked on tub thumping, candlebox, and Marcy's playground, man.
I sweat too much in flannel, and Marcy's a pedophile. Look, I'm sorry. Tanner, look at me. Hey, come on, I said look at me. This time I'm serious. What can I do to prove it to you?
Gear up.
What? I thought this was just Wii Fit, but for the Xbox. Are you telling me there's actual apparel that goes with this?
Well, supposedly. I mean, it's only a rumor right now, but I heard that tonight. Alan is coming decked out in the latest stuff.
Holy shit.
Now that's the real deal.
Cute outfit, Alan. Please now take your place at your station to begin your workout.
Yeah, give me a sec.
Like Johnny Mnemonic.
Mixed with a universal soldier. Stop gawking and give me room, fellas. I need to pump up.
Class is starting, man. You better make it quick.
I can't rush this, bro. I'd run the risk of performing at less than peak heart rate.
Yeah, but Alan, how can they even detect?
What does pumping have to do with?
Come on, Alan. All we're trying to say is... For real. So.
Okay, class. We're going to synchronize play in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Jesus, Alan, everything okay over there?
Being the only two survivors, it might help us if you describe what exactly happened here. I mean, it looks like someone popped off the third act of an Irvin Kershner film.
Well, officer, let's just say Alan died...
Pumping up the volume.
Good one, man. Up top.
That's not funny. A man is dead.
You're right. I'm sorry, officer. That was in really poor taste. Still, I need to know. Did his high tops get scuffed?
Well, boys, the rest of them will likely go in the community bin. There's that much goo. But the tops? Primo condition, if you ask me.
Dibs.
God damn it! Is it a dumb game, or am I just dumb? Dumb.
What's dropping?
If you are looking for relevant gaming coverage from experts, you are not getting it on this show.
Ladies and
Ladies and gentlemen, this past week has been a whirlwind of emotions, if I can get serious for a second. From the highest of the highs to the lowest of the lows. Some of you may have heard that Tanner and I were tapped by the U.S. government back when we were first in college, based on high aptitude scores that made us qualified international assassins. And
yeah, there was a public press release about a super secret government Skunk Works assassin program and its two newest recruits. Our full names were printed, pictures. You know, looking back, it was probably not the best strategy, and I think the CIA has learned from that.
It's probably why we've racked up all of 0.0 kills since the announcement of our of our entry into the...
When I first got signed on to be an assassin, I bought a fighter jet that I was planning on adorning with every kill I made. Like, I called myself the Ace of Spades. So I was going to put a spade or an ace of spades on the nose of my F-15, but zero kills later, I've got all these decals. So if you want a decal, people, superdumbgames@gmail.com, I can send you an ace of spades decal.
Yeah, my nickname was War Lizard. And so if you want a pet lizard, just contact us. I have live lizards.
So what were you planning on doing with every kill? Like, you?
I was going to stomp on a lizard. Lately, our assignment, though, has been changed to conduct domestic spying, which extended to a lot of you, full disclosure. So yes, I'll just say that, Mark, if you're listening, we know all about your masturbatory habits, and no, I won't tongue punch your fart box for you. But let me remind the rest of you that by virtue of being super fans of the show, you have signed on to terms and conditions that include giving us access to your bank accounts, allowing us full reign over your online footprint, such as social network profiles, Facebook, Friendster, LinkedIn, LiveJournal. Surprisingly, our data shows that a lot of you still use LiveJournal, so I really don't understand what demographic we're appealing to.
Aging goths.
Having said all that, we are sad to inform you that despite being deemed mission essential to the U.S. federal government operations during this time of fiscal uncertainty, Tanner and I have decided that in a show of solidarity with our fellow civil servant brethren, we will be donating half of our paychecks to an escrow account that is slated to disperse back into our pockets once this is all over, while the other half will be donated to British Petroleum to help raise awareness through internet ads about all the great work that they're doing to clean up the Gulf oil spill. So, two great causes, us, and really well-produced online videos.
God, fucking BP. What a great cause.
Yes. So, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to episode 4 of Super Dumb Games podcast. I am one of your hosts, Chris.
I'm your other host, Tanner.
And this week, we are taking you out on hunting season. That's right, folks. As of 1 October, bow season began for those of you who are hunters. The rest of us who rely on modern technology to feed and clothe us, we let that date come and go. Didn't really matter much to us. But Tanner celebrated in the only way he knew how, which was by playing Hunter's Trophy 2.
Yeah, Hunter's Trophy 2 America.
Is there a Hunter's Trophy 2 South Africa or Sudan?
The only other one I know of is Australia. Mm. So, you know, where to begin with this game? There I was, back in the wild again, and I felt right at home where I belong.
God damn you.
I had that feeling coming over me again. Just like it happened so many times before. Yeah. The spirit of the woods was like an old good friend. It makes me feel warm and good inside. I knew his name, and it was good to see him again, because in the wind, he's still alive.
Who?
Oh, Hunter's Trophy 2! Walk with me down the trails again! Take me back where I belong! So, Hunter's Trophy 2 America. It came out, I guess, September 3rd of this year? Fuck. Man, because it does not seem like a modern game. Published by Big Ben Interactive. So I already got burned once by downloading a PlayStation Network game and it being a move game. That being Mad Dog McCree.
Oh, God.
And then I downloaded Hunter's Trophy 2 America. By the way, I bought two copies of this game, which is another story. I bought one for Xbox 360, realizing then that I couldn't record off Xbox. Had to buy it again.
Oh, God.
On PlayStation. I spent $20 on this game, people.
At least you got a backup in case one breaks down.
So I fire it up and, you know, it's showing here's how to operate the move. I'm like, you got to be shitting me. I just bought this game twice, and I'm not going to be able to play it. Well, it turns out, even though I think it was probably developed with the Move in mind as a shooting gallery, you can use the controller just very poorly. So I've been playing with the controller. It's like, you probably know of like old-timey coin-op arcade games. Probably seen one in the back of an arcade with a metal rifle, and you're shooting BBs at honeypots sitting on a picnic table or something.
Right.
It's that, but with a loose hunting premise. It's Duck Hunt with PlayStation 2 graphics, essentially. And it is so horribly designed. It's as if at every turn they were faced with two decisions and made the wrong one for what makes a good experience. Yet, I want to play more of it. It's like the ultimate dumb game in that people... I was playing one of the worst rated video games on the PlayStation Network, and I was laughing out loud at it. I love it. I don't know. Like, it's terrible, yet I love it. It to me is the first truly dumb game I've played since we started this show.
You know, you mentioned that at every turn they made the wrong decision, but they should have taken a page out of the Fredbear Ted Nugent notebook and just cover all your bases. Look, you go up on that ridge, I'll go down in the swamp. We'll get that buck. Like, we'll get... there's no one wrong way. You just go, you corner it from all angles.
Well, unfortunately, they tell you where to go.
Oh.
So they highlight, get up on this ridge in this spot, and you can't get down in the swamp because apparently your hunter can't swim. So you get to water, and it's like you hit a wall.
Oh, God. What's your high score? How many animals did you murder?
Oh, my God. There's one of these videos, and I'm hoping to get these videos out next week. It's been recorded. We just have to do our commentary. There's one of these videos, I think it'll be episode 4, where I'm in, I think it's Colorado. Okay. And what ends up happening is you qualify for licenses, which is boring as fuck. And then you go to different hunting locations and you have a quota of animals you have to murder. And you can't murder over that quota or instantly the game ends. So, side note, a lot of times you'll be murdering animals, hit your quota, and then you just have to sit there until time runs out. So on one of the, I think it's on the second video, I had to sit for 3.5 minutes doing nothing.
What?
Because I couldn't shoot my weapon. If I shot my weapon, it would scare the animals away and game would end. And I couldn't murder any more animals because that would end my game. So I had to sit.
Wow.
And do nothing.
What a dumb idea for a game mechanic to keep in there. Like,
so what they do, I think, in some of the levels to satiate your blood, your animal bloodthirst,
your sanguine addiction,
is to, like, I had to kill one wild hare, but I could lay waste to as many coyotes as I wanted. I killed easily 12 to 15 coyotes just rapid fire, just reloading, like reload, like coyote after coyote. Like, they follow very particular paths. There's no AI. A coyote is clearly going to come down this trail every 2.5 minutes, and they just like shoot down like they're on a zip line, and you just blast them. They're just instantly dead.
Do they come up to you and try to like deal damage to you? Will they eat you or anything, or do they just sort of turn around and walk slowly and then get spooked by the gunshots and stuff like that?
Yeah, it seems... so far, I haven't encountered any bears. I mean, that's why I want to play a bit more. I want to see what it's like to hunt the big game.
Right.
And then, of course, the most dangerous game. But so far, all the animals, I'm clearly the dominant presence in the environment.
Right.
So they are running away, and I am shooting them in the back.
Yeah, sure. And let that be a lesson to some of our teenage thrill seekers who really want to go out and get a thrill.
These teenage thrill seekers... we're out. They thought they'd go on a joyride.
Let them go up into the Northwest and let them tangle with a grizzly bear or a polar bear or brown bear and get that effect that will cleanse the soul. That's Fred Bear speaking at the end of the hit song of his same name.
Because, you know, you're not alone when you're in the great outdoors. You got his spirit. You got his soul. He'll guide your steps. He'll guide your arrows home. The restless spirit forever roams. This song is truly something to behold.
Ted Nugent got a big boner out of it. So
yeah. So that's Hunter's Trophy 2. Hopefully videos next week. Stay tuned. We'll do a double impact.
Very nice.
And there will be more, folks. So 4 initial videos, probably 4 more to come. I need to stand toe-to-toe with the Grizzly.
This week, I played Spelunker for the Nintendo Entertainment System. And again, as I mentioned last week, this was also a game that came out on Atari and, Commodore 64. And the game pissed me off so much. I went into it thinking, I got this. This seems like an easy enough game. You start off, you're on an elevator that you get to control. You jump off that platform, and you hope to make it to the platform to your right, where you'll collect gold, it seems, and bombs and other items. Except for me, I kept missing the ledge and died like 9 times in a row. You'll see that in the video that I recorded. And then, basically, the gist of the game is that you are a guy wearing a mining hat, and you go down an elevator, and then you're dodging little spritzes of gas vapors that come out of stuff in the ground in the cave, and you collect a bunch of stuff to get points. I have no idea where the game's going because I only made it through one level. It's not fun.
So, do you know about Spelunky?
No, what is that?
I think it came out this year, indie release. It's made by one dude. I think it came out on 360 and was originally on PC. It's a huge indie game right now. And now that I'm looking at it and at Spelunker, it looks to be a direct, very close homage to Spelunker.
I'm looking at screenshots now, and outside of the fact that Spelunky has much more updated cartoonish graphics, it kind of looks like Terraria, the way that...
It's like a fusion of those two. So my question, because Spelunky's big thing is that it's a roguelike, so you try to get as far as you can before dying, and your levels are randomly generated. I imagine Spelunker, it's got a very set level, right?
Yeah, every time it's the same things. You know, there's no surprises, which is why it's even more frustrating as you're playing through it, because you know exactly what's going to kill you every time. You faced off with it the last time you died, and you just got to sit there and sigh, because you know it's going to happen again. And that's the other thing that sucks. You get only, I think, 3 lives, and then you're dead. You'll see in the playthrough, there's times where there's no good reason for me to be dead. I climb up a rope at one point, and in any other game in the world, you could climb to the top of that rope and jump off of it, and you'd be safe. In this game, if you just tap off the rope even after you first got on it, you'll die. It makes no sense. Or there'll be like a small little crevice, like this little V-looking crevice, and you would think like, oh, that's maybe for me to run down the slope and get back up. No, you die when you go in there. And there's no indication that that would kill you. So the game is.
What's the goal?
You got it. You're trying to spelunk.
Just an honest day's work.
That's right. I don't know. It predates when spelunking actually broke into That's right.
When Spelunky, I don't know if you people remember, but in 1993, spelunking was all the rage. I mean,
it was huge.
You couldn't go anywhere. I mean, there were 2 things everybody needed. They needed a pair of LA gear, and they needed a metal pan with a light on it for a hat.
Right, exactly. And any sort of tight fit they could find. Didn't matter where it was. That was the big thing. So, now, I don't know. The game's... I was actually trying to put myself back in, 1986. Would this have been a game I would have just kept going back to over and over again? And honestly, I don't think I would have continued with it. I find it to be dumb, and not even dumb in an endearing way. It's just dumb.
I think I had this game for Atari, and it was, as were many games of that era, it was beyond my baby brain. I could not comprehend how to play this thing.
This game, even now as an adult, I'm playing it, and after a while I started questioning, why am I even going after bombs? And
there were deep philosophical existential issues to be confronted.
Shouldn't this be a pure exploration game? Like, why am I trying to rack up points anymore? I just need to try to get as deep as I can go. That's the whole point of spelunking and boning.
Spelunky's really a good reflection of life in that way. It's like, you really should just be going as deep as you want to go, but you're so concerned with racking up points that it ruins the pleasure of the experience. What's dropping? Cities in Motion 2. Listen, it was such a hit. Cities in Motion 2 shook up the world Muhammad Ali style, y'all. It necessitated, the people would not, there were rumors of revolt if Cities in Motion 2 did not get an expansion. And ladies and gentlemen, you've got your expansion. Cities in Motion 2: Olden Times. Many are calling this the world's greatest expansion title. It is spelled Olden Times. Olden Times. So for the very, very few of you that don't know about Cities in Motion 2, developed by Colossal Order Limited and publisher Paradox Interactive for the PC and Mac, Cities in Motion 2 is the sequel to the popular mass transit simulation game, Cities in Motion. Build, manage, and lead your transportation network to provide cities with their ever-changing needs. Cities in Motion 2 introduces new features, including multiplayer game modes. Chris, you might have your dream of being the passenger.
Yes.
Day and night cycles, timetables, and dynamic cities. What's most important are the hot new rides in Cities in Motion 2.
Give them to me.
Check out this shit. First up, the Maurice Futura bus. The Maurice Futura is, and this is their copy. I love it. The Maurice Futura is very attractive to passengers. And uses only the minimum of petrol. It is reliable and has good capacity and average speed, making it a very well-rounded vehicle for all types of routes. The Maurice factory has developed a special hull to make the vehicle light to provide low petrol consumption and speed, but still kept the structure sturdy. Special ticketing reading devices instantly read the passengers' travel cards as they pass through the doors. I mean, that sounds fucking hot!
This is a game designed solely for Europeans. I can't imagine a single American giving a shit.
When I was trying to plan what's dropping, there were two releases. It was this one, clearly highly European. And then there was Gas Guzzlers Extreme, which was...
No.
Like, it was like, get in this hot rod with a rocket launcher and blow stuff up, you know? It was so interesting to see these, how they described their products so differently. And I love the idea of someone looking to buy a game and getting really excited about, oh man, the bus in the new Olden Times has got special ticket reading devices in it.
I want to see a crossover developed between these two games where the Gas Guzzlers take over the Cities in Motion. So like you get to be a Gas Guzzler and you just ruin everything in the city. It's like Monster Truck Event in the city.
Yeah, or like Cities in Motion 2 Road Warrior. Yeah. You're like a 45-year-old woman who's working toward a pension, and you're just trying to get people to the places they of employment on time, but meanwhile there's an apocalypse and you're trying to manage gas consumption while also dodging bullets. So listen, there's more.
Oh, okay. Hit me with it.
The Sternberger MIDI bus, a product of Swiss standard in solid quality and innovative looks. MIDI is a bus primarily intended for dense urban areas. It's lightweight, rather short wheelbase, and low flooring enable easy maneuvering and boarding.
I have an honest question. Is this a game about city building, about building train tracks or about customizing the things that go on the train tracks and within the city? Are we looking at a SimCity type game?
Yeah. So it's a more zoomed in SimCity in a way, okay, where you're, I think, like, the metrics are you're trying to get people where they need to go on time while managing energy consumption and all that. Which is a really good point to bring up why anyone would give a shit about the low flooring in this thing. That impacts the player in no way at all.
You should just be able to load your citizenry into catapults and launch them across rivers and stuff, if that's the most efficient way to get people from point A to point B.
I think I'm kind of fascinated by train enthusiasts,
mm-hmm,
you know, and I think they're appealing to that demographic where if you're really into trains and cars and things that move, you know, if you've got the mindset of a five-year-old, sorry, people who are out there into trains, that these are fetishes for you in a way.
Yes.
So when you're playing the game, you may not be doing anything in the train, but you're imagining the fucking awesome carpet in there and the you know, like,
that whole train fetishism is really fascinating to me because it is, I don't know if it's ever going to go away, because I've seen videos on YouTube where a kid is standing at, usually it's an autistic kid or, you know, some kid with Asperger's or something, where they're just like, they're standing outside of a train depot or by train tracks. And there's especially this one kid who starts going like, yay, as soon as a train's coming in. He gets so excited at the type of train.
It's just a giant metal tube.
But I wonder, think back to when you were a kid. Kids who had train sets, well, they were already weird. Those were the same kids who, like, also collected, if you remember those kids who would collect horse figurines.
Yeah, I was just going to say, trains are to boys as horses are to girls.
People who carry this into adulthood, I find it even more fascinating just to kind of see them. Because I have the things that I love that, you know, they're just beloved to me because just by virtue of what they meant to me as a kid. It's just that with trains, I know I wanted to get into them. I can't imagine myself at the end of a long day going home and going, gotta go settle in my basement, put on the conductor hat and hit power, you know, because that doesn't appeal to me at all. In the same way that, like, I enjoy playing ping pong, but
I don't enjoy playing ping pong. At my work, there are a bunch of ping pong tables and there are people always down there. I don't get it! All I ever see, when people are playing ping pong, unless they're an Olympian, all they're ever doing is picking up balls off the floor. There's no back and forth. Do you hear that hissing sound?
Yeah.
It's like a hissing or a bubbling sound.
Yeah. What is
it? It's just a top sizzler! Microsoft says, if you're planning on standing the Xbox One upright, you better back the fuck off. Quote, do it at your own risk.
Jesus, that's daunting.
We don't support vertical orientation. Do it at your own risk, said Albert Pinello, product manager at Xbox. Who? What? At some point in time, people no longer could tolerate laying a console on its side. Why is this a thing? Why does anyone care? Just lay it down.
Why is it one over the other? If I want to try to save space on my shelf, I'll put it vertically. Why are you going to tell me I can't do that?
Well, Xbox is saying you're going to... There was an awesome flaw. I can't remember if it was Xbox or PlayStation, where they were actually marketing the device as standing vertically, but it would grind the... the CD.
I don't remember which one that would have been.
Yeah, but it was awesome. I just imagined some kid standing that sucker up, like, just getting it home.
Yeah.
Putting the disc in, and it...
Enjoy your new game, kid.
All right, more Xbox One news.
Ugh.
So, Chris.
Yes.
When you, because you've already got every system pre-ordered, you are one of the world's foremost gamers.
Yeah, a lot of them are being given to me for free because of the high profile this show grants me.
Yeah. What are you planning on doing with your Xbox One right when you get it home, unpacked and plugged in? What's the first thing you're going to be doing?
First thing I do when I get home, I will probably use it as a footstool when I go into the bathroom to take a dump. That way my knees are scrunched up to my chest so I'm shitting properly.
That sounds like a worthwhile expenditure. And you know what? That would actually be a good strategy because Xbox One people, when you unpack that Xbox and plug it in, guess what? You're in store for a day one patch that'll take 15 to 20 minutes to download. That's what I call an excellent experience.
Is it just me? I know that I know games and game console releases as well have been experiencing a lot of issues where, you know, it comes out and they have to patch and patch and patch. But like, especially with a console's release, it seems like there should be more planning to the point where these sorts of things don't have to happen. It will be shipped out with everything good to go.
Yeah, what they're saying is that because these consoles are coming in just being finished by the time they hit stores, like everything's mm-hmm. being finalized, that they need just the time between manufacture and final release to finish software and everything. Like, it wouldn't work because the time schedule is so crunched. They need that time to develop stuff that'll just make it operate effectively. And then because Microsoft has gone back on so many plans they had, mm-hmm. that it's made it even more severe, I guess.
God.
Still, that's the worst. I mean, you get this thing, and then you've got to sit there for 20 minutes. And, you know, 20 minutes is probably very conservative.
I'm guessing it depends on what kind of connection you have. So if you're in a rural area where you can't get very good internet speeds or anything like that, then you're fucked.
Yeah, I mean, you're on your 56K
dial-up,
which still exists.
Yeah.
You would be shocked how many people are on dial-up still.
That's why Google Fiber is trying to make its way into the rural areas first. Yeah. Because, you know, those plebeians, they need all the help they can get.
All right, next up. So Interbrand, I don't know who the fuck they are, but they did something to make news, and they made a lot of news. A lot of dumb news. So they made a list of the top 100 global brands.
Okay.
And since you were such a superstar last time predicting what the hot toys were,
okay,
your task is to predict what game companies, both developers and hardware manufacturers, made the top 100 list of global brands.
Fuck.
And if you can, try to guess where they were on that list.
Oh, this is going to be impossible. Because I'm going to guess, like, for instance, if we're talking... So we're talking about the whole list itself. It's beyond gaming. It's like companies.
Yeah, it's all brands worldwide.
So, for instance, you know, like, I would say Coca-Cola is on there. Yep. I would say Microsoft, of course, is on there.
Nope.
I would say...
Nope.
What? Apple's gone there, right?
Apple is number one. Coca-Cola is number three. Microsoft does not make the list.
What the fuck?
Oh, wait. No, wait.
Are they number two?
They're number five. Ladies and gentlemen, your expert news department.
See, I ain't dumb.
All right. Yes. Yeah, so they are on the list. So there are three more.
Okay. Who else might be on there? Give me a clue.
I don't think you should need a clue. You got Microsoft.
Facebook?
If you want to count them as a gaming company, I didn't really... I guess that does count. They're on here. I don't know. They're down. Let's see. They're number 52.
Okay.
Which is still impressive. If Facebook just a few years ago was bullshit...
It still is bullshit.
Well, yeah, it's even more so in a lot of ways, but just in terms of its brand recognition.
Right. Okay, so Sony?
Microsoft, Sony, yes. Where do you think Sony's falling here?
Okay.
In the top 100.
In the top 100. And you said Microsoft was five.
Five.
Sony, I'm going to say... All right, first I'm going to say, are they top 25?
No.
Whoa, holy shit. Cause I was
a fall from grace, because probably in the 80s they had to be top 15.
Yeah. Fuck, I'm gonna say they fall in number 46.
You son of a bitch.
What? No, wait, no.
Did you look it up?
No!
Holy shit!
I'm not fucking around. I just picked a number under 50.
Oh my god, you dead.
I'm dead.
You're
on?
Some kind of prodigy.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just... You've just witnessed
the birth of a genius.
I can't believe, I'm not joking. I had no idea.
Number 46. Two more to go. One of them is more a developer, and they just released a huge product.
Like Rockstar or something?
No, Rockstar's not on there.
Oh, okay.
Think about someone who would make games that would still have a huge brand otherwise.
Fuck.
They just released a big kids game.
Like Nintendo?
Nintendo is on there. Do you think they are above Sony or below Sony at number 46?
Nintendo has that whole handheld thing that we've been talking about, right?
True. But they also don't have consumer electronics or music or film.
I'm still going to say that they rank above Sony, and I'm going to put them ranked at number 39.
67.
Jesus Christ.
I'm now doubting your skills.
Fuck. 67. Okay, and then there's one more game developer.
This is a top...
Atari.
No, this is a top 15 company.
Oh, shit. Okay.
One of the most recognizable brands in the world. Has historically had shitty games, but are starting to turn it around with a big release recently. Kids games.
TurboGrafx-16. I don't know.
Disney!
God damn it.
Yeah. So those four, Microsoft at 5, Disney at 14, Sony at 46, and Nintendo at 67, were the only game companies, which kind of, I guess when you're so focused on gaming, you can kind of not recognize, like, a rock star, even as big as they are, making $1 billion or whatever in a week, that they don't even crack the top 100.
I mean, $1 billion is a lot of money, but I would imagine companies like Coca-Cola and Apple, just based on whatever subsidiaries are fall beneath their large umbrella of brands, they're probably raking in, 100 times that amount.
They actually have the numbers here. Apple, what does this even mean? Let's see. I guess they have it in millions of dollars, and it's $98,316, so $98 billion.
Yeah, $98
billion. Fuck.
Jesus. And that's about 100 times more than Rockstar made. Yeah. So... that just, goes to show you when you've got that umbrella organization, whatever else falls underneath Apple, whoever they've, bought in with it, just brings a shit ton of money. Because like Procter & Gamble, I don't know if they even show them on the list, but those companies end up owning a shit ton of stuff that you wouldn't even know about it.
All right, final segment, hot off the wire. This is your top... gaming stories from the PR Newswire. This is coming out of Dallas. Huge announcement for the community of West Texas, Midland, Texas, in particular. Synergy Cinemas announces the opening of an all-new, all-digital movie theater and amusement complex in Midland on October 11th. The Synergy Midland and Epic All Caps.
Whoa.
Complex. This is located at 1917 Liberty Drive. It's going to boast some amazing shit. 11 auditoriums. A game floor with over 60 games. Redemption store. Chef prepared, I would fucking hope, American favorites. I mean, what's the alternative? Beer and wine. Movie must-haves. I don't know what that means.
I would imagine like Jujubes, Sour Patch Kids, Twizzlers.
Oh, yeah, because they're kind of on the food tip.
Yeah.
There. That's just the beginning. Listen to this.
Take us to the end.
Midland, wake the fuck up. There's going to be a multi-level laser tag arena in this place.
Holy shit.
There's also going to be a Skywalker, which is a gravity-defying black light overhead ropes course.
Wait, wasn't that on American Gladiators where like they're chained to the ceiling and they would like run over the ceiling like they're... Do you remember that?
Yes, yeah. And the final piece, Atomic Rush, which they call a quick response immersive game experience. So leave that up to your imagination, whatever that could be. It doesn't seem like they go into detail. This feels like the 90s have returned.
Yeah.
And I love it.
I need this opening near me because... I remember in the early 2000s, they had, what was that called? It was Steven Spielberg.
The DreamWorks.
Yeah, the DreamWorks places.
Which died out, basically.
But do you remember they had a two-story shooting game that you'd get locked in and you'd be catapulted up and down like a rag doll while trying to shoot at a screen?
Like, it's like the initial launch knocks the kid out. They're basically concussed.
Yeah.
Being drug up and down. The gun drops to the floor. And then like after the game's over, you know, it slowly lowers, like, and then they unlock the kid from the apparatus. And the body just falls to the ground like Han Solo released from carbonite.
Three men dressed in all black carry him away to an unknown location. Like, I gotta get on that ride. I'm trying to figure out what Atomic Rush is.
Yeah, who knows?
It says it's the new exciting arcade-style game bringing you the latest in touch and LED technology with unlimited variations, vibrant colors, high fidelity, sound, and more. Atomic Rush leaps ahead of other games in the marketplace by infusing state-of-the-art touch technology. It looks like Simon attached to a wall.
They just take a kid, they take a bunch of those Atomic Ball candies, they shove it in the kid's puss, close their chops, throw him in a closet with a Simon game and just, like, pump Savage Garden.
By the looks of it, it almost looks like they could throw you into this room and then really the only fun is for the people on the outside while they watch you basically play Nick Arcade. That's what it looks like. And it's got the types of floors inside of them where, because of the neon lights, you can see all the lint on the floors.
Yeah, that was always the worst with black lights.
Yeah.
Like in laser tag things, because I've got dandruff. You go to a laser tag thing, they flip the fucking switch.
Yeah.
It's like, oh! Like, you could no longer, like, you had a pretty good concealing shirt on, but.
Yeah. And if you were wearing a shirt that had a stain in it, you had to convince everyone it was like, I dropped a meatball at lunch. No, you jizzed all over that. We know.
One of the things I love about this press release is they boast the amount of vests the Lasertron Laser Tag Arena has. They're like 58 vest multi-level.
How do they arrive at 58 as the number? That was the sweet spot.
Yeah, like 59, the balance is fucked.
If we had 60, that's 30 on 30. No way. 58, we get to do 29 on 29. What is that? It makes no sense.
Listen, the Synergy Cinemas, they know what they're doing.
Clearly.
And if you want to know more, folks, contact Angie Marita Carena at 214-621-1608. You know, if you're foaming at the mouth to know more about Atomic Rush and particularly what Savage Garden songs they'll be playing.
This is going to go the way of golf simulators where you just hit a ball against a tarp that looks like
Yeah. It's a losing proposition. In 2 years, this stuff will be outdated, you know?
It's all gimmicky.
Which is what's wonderful about it.
Yeah. Is that our news?
That's your news. Fuck off. So it's just me, Tanner, for this wild card. Lucky you, you're just going to hear from your favorite host of Super Dumb Games. You know, but I don't want to make too much light of this. This is going to be a little weird for me because Chris, unfortunately, passed away shortly after we recorded that last segment. If you knew Chris, then you knew of his zest for life. His eternal optimism, his spontaneity, and his addiction to adrenaline. He was nothing if not a risk taker. So that's why right after we finished the news, he jetted out to Midland, Texas to be the first in line for Synergy's Atomic Rush. But after 20 atomic jawbreakers and 3 or 4 spins of truly madly deeply, he collapsed. The official cause of death was asphyxiation, but, you know, well, if you ask me, God just needed another angel. I've been told that when he was discovered, as his life's candle fluttered, nearly extinguished, he found the strength and courage to whisper one last thing. Those words?
What a rush!
Of course, in accordance with the wishes of Chris's will, his ashes have been dumped in the community bin. Speaking of the community bin, we're wanting to do a new segment, hopefully for next week, called Just Spitballin', where we get a premise for a video game, say a title, and we make up, based on that title and maybe a couple other requirements, you know, you could say, well, this game's needs to have all female characters or something. So based on a title and maybe a couple other restrictions, we make up what that game is going to be. So you can send suggestions for video game titles to us at superdumbgames@gmail.com or just add us on Twitter or whatever. And just maybe, after we get done sifting through, you know, the hundreds of suggestions, we just might choose yours. So we actually recorded a wild card for this week. And it was actually a Just Spitballing premise. But it was too hot for TV, folks. It got a little out of hand. Ended up making the call that we don't want to alienate everyone by that particular amount of references to balls. So we decided to put it in our little explicit vault that we may release this stuff later on. We already have a video locked away in there, and now this segment of the podcast. And we're thinking maybe making that a special release of all the stuff that was so ridiculous and out of hand that even us two depraved individuals with a depraved podcast and video show, we even deem it to maybe be a little bit over the line. You know, I hate the idea of wasted work, so maybe that stuff will surface at some point. But instead, I figured since we have a little bit of time left in the podcast, I'd do something a little bit different and just tell a story, just spin a yarn, you know, just nose up, nuzzle, is it nuzzle? Cozy up to the fire alongside Uncle Tanner. And let me tell a tale of my gaming past. And what I was thinking about was, what are the dumb games from my past that I really loved? And there's one in particular that really sticks out to me. It's a game I think very few people even know exists. It came out on a whole host of systems. I guess it was first released on the Amiga. But I encountered it in 1994 on Super Nintendo. It's a game called Street Racer. It's basically a ripoff of Mario Kart. And there are 8 different characters, or 9 different characters, all of which are horrendous stereotypes, or just really stupid. So you have, there's Frank Einstein, first name Frank, last name Einstein. You can take a guess as to what he is. There's Helmut, who's like a German pilot. And then there's a character named Haja, who's a Turkish magician on a carpet. Sizulu, who's like this African voodoo guy. They threw a woman in there, which is kind of surprising. Surf Sister, who's just a bikini clad type, you know, of course. Sumo, who's a sumo. Raphael, who's like this Italian lover guy. And then a stupid character named Biff, who's like your standard American asshole type. But it's a kart racing game. And I think it really stood out because it was a Mario Kart clone, but they tried to spice things up with, in particular, this soccer game, where there were goals and you could use your cars to bounce a soccer ball around and get it into a goal. And there was also a battle mode because all the cars had weapons and that kind of thing. And I don't think it did very well, and nor did it receive very good reviews. But, God, I played the living shit out of this game. And I have really fond memories in particular of an old friend, John. You know, he'd come over, and this was one of a select few games that we loved so much that we created this kit that was basically a lunch sack, a brown paper lunch sack. Written on the front of this thing was, "Do not open unless extremely bored." And in that, we placed a Bo Jackson kind of Tiger Toy handheld Street Racer. Maybe Pilot Wings. God, it's something else that I can't remember. So I think it was sort of a non-game thing. And we put this stuff in this bag and put it up on the highest shelf in my room as like the nuclear option of summertime boredom or whatever. It was, what was really extraordinary about it was that we purposefully, because this was meant to be a nuclear option of boredom, we actually deprived ourselves of some of the things we loved the most, like some of our favorite games and experiences. We decided, okay, we won't play these things so that when we do need them, they're going to come through, and we know they'll come through. And I remember that bag sitting up there and just collecting dust. But it did get opened. It took a while, but I think we finally broke into it. I don't remember if it worked or not. It probably didn't work. But Street Racer, here's what was really, to me, extraordinary about it. And I think this speaks as well, like reflecting back on it. It speaks to, I think, the kind of player I am and sort of the friendship that I had with John, in a sense. So you could play up to 8 players in this game, which was kind of extraordinary. You needed that adapter on Super Nintendo. It was a weird peripheral. I think it was officially licensed peripheral that you could blow out some games, and this was one of them, to up to 8 players. If you got, I think, 2 of those devices. But we only played just 2 player, and I rarely played it alone. It was always just me and John playing it. But we didn't race each other. It was we turned it into a cooperative game, even though it wasn't meant to be cooperative. And what we'd do is we'd start the race, and immediately turn around and just cruise backwards throughout the whole track. And together we would find and pin the computer controlled opponents and you know, trying to fuck up their race the whole time, basically. And we had a blast just doing this. But then, you know, after hours and hours of play, there was this moment where I had, or John had, one of the guys pinned up against the wall. You know, we both had our cars there, just keeping this player totally out of the race for an extended period of time. We kept ramming him, and, you know, so entertained seeing the computer struggle against us, trying to futilely re-enter the race. And all of a sudden, the computer player popped through the wall. You know, so there was this barrier around the whole track. You know, there's the track, and then there's like the area just beyond the track, and then a barrier there, and like a wasteland of digital landscape beyond that was unreachable. But we managed, just through, and I know this isn't how this shit works, so to this day, I don't quite get how we broke through, but we sent that computer player through the wall and out into the desert of the game. And I think it was, if I remember correctly, I think it was the sumo guy. And he just drove off into the sunset out there and was just kind of wandering around in this wasteland, you know, following some set algorithm, you know, probably racing the track out there or something. And this just was mind-blowing because this violated, and it really does violate games in a way. You know, those walls are usually pretty set, but we had found this hole. And it was the weirdest trick too, because it was just sheer force of will. It was as if that digital wall had some give to it, like a physical space. Like it was a fence that was, you could just squeeze yourself through in a way. So naturally, the next step was getting all of the computer opponents out there and then to get ourselves out there, which of course we did, and it was glorious. So I thought I would end this little bit by actually reading something for my dissertation that I wrote about this. And listen up, people. This is an exclusive because probably beyond me who wrote the thing, maybe three other people have read this damn dissertation. So I began each chapter with a little overture for a first person moment from my gaming past that kind of sets the tone and theme for the chapter. And this chapter was called Technologic, and it was about figuring out game systems, figuring out how they work, breaking them, and working against them. 1994. We're not competitive. John, like me, hates to see a friend lose, so we turn Street Racer, a mediocre Mario Kart clone, into a cooperative game. At the beginning of each race, we instantly turn our cars around and cruise in the opposite direction of the other racers. We spend hours ramming our unwitting computer-controlled opponents, pinning them in, and laughing as they pitifully attempt to escape. We pin one car in a corner of the track on the very edge of the map. It looks like a low wall that in the real world could easily be vaulted, but we know it is an invisible barrier that vertically extends infinitely. Don't ask us how it works, we just know. But this time, something incredible happens. The computer's car slips through the barrier and ends up on the other side. He's lost and wandering in a no man's land extending to the digital horizon. It's a glorious impossibility. We knew we had to get out there. It didn't take us long to discover an exploit and get beyond the wall too. In the vastness of off-limit space, far away from the race, there's nothing to do but cruise. But that doesn't matter. We found something out. We did it. We won. So that's going to do it for this week's episode of Super Dumb Games. Coming up, we should finally have that Hunter's Trophy 2 America video footage up sometime this week. Chris is actually flying out to visit San Francisco, and we're hoping to pump out a lot of content, record 2 podcasts, and do some cool stuff. Finally being in the same room, which will be nice. As always, go to www.superdumbgames.com. There's a bunch of buttons on the left-hand side that you can follow all relevant social media accounts and whatnot. See you next Monday.
Dumb Games.